I'm Jamal, and you're listening to Guess in the Mecha, your weekly anime and manga analysis podcast. From inspiring arcs to game-changing cinematography, I'm on a journey to try and make sense of it all, episode by episode. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to another episode of Guess in the Mecha, and this week we are talking about the anime stuff that I discovered in 2021. Last year I made an episode called A Year in Sakuga. I also made another episode which I kind of forgot the name of, but it was lessons, I think it was anime lessons I learned from 2020, and those are two episodes I'm actually quite proud of. However, back then obviously we didn't have a video version, so and I also wanted to change things up this year, and my relationship with the term quote-unquote Sakuga has also changed quite a lot since I'd made those episodes. And so this year I want to maybe take a bit of a different approach, but still talk about the stuff that I've discovered and come across for the first time this year. This year, I've spent quite a lot of time talking about and thinking about direction and what I think makes that tick. And so in this final episode of the end of year review series that we've been doing, I'm going to focus on some directors that I really like and board artists as well, and really just talk about what I think makes that really intriguing and what drew me to it in the first place. But let's get into the episode for this week. That is anime stuff I discovered in 2021. I'm going to begin this episode by talking about some creators who I've already discussed on other episodes, but just because I want to kind of give a nice round summary of some of the creators that I really liked this year, I think it's a good idea to include them in this episode. But please do refer to the respective episodes in which I'm talking about. I'll mention those later. So we have Yuki Onomori, who directed episodes 3 and 12 of Wonder Egg Priority. Assume you count the recap in the episodes. And then we have Keishiro Saito, who worked on episodes 3 and 8. Both of these creators are relatively new to the world of directing. This was actually Yonamori's debut, for example. Saito's kind of done more stuff in terms of Boogie Pop and Aka 13 Regards. In terms of Yonamori, what I really love is just how they handle so many things in twos. It's just really refreshing seeing all these different binaries being played around with. And I think binaries have kind of just been a theme this year that I've really liked. From, of course, Heikei, we saw a bunch of that, and Wonder Egg as well. And you could even say Sunny Boy in some respects, in Saito's direction, and the binary between worlds and all these other things, and the binary between some of the other characters in Sunny Boy. Binaries have been a big thing in the anime that I've really enjoyed this year. And I think Yonamori's tapped into it perhaps the best, or at least in the most memorable way for me. And the thing that always comes to my head is that graphic in which the graphic I kind of put together on Wonder Egg episode 12, where you have the night and day inside Ai's own Wonder Egg in which she's in. And I really liked that. And it just reminds me that there are, again, so many great young creatives that are still debuting onto anime and still making a name for themselves. Still, this is the start of their journey. And so seeing that on such a good show was a really good breath of fresh air. Episode 12 of Wonder Egg Priority really solidifies to me what I think Ai's character is all about, which is more of the conflict isn't really the conflict between the monsters in the Wonder Egg and her, but the real conflict is in her own head. It's not just the physical conflict of the show, but it's the mental conflict and the conflict of ideas she has within her in terms of what exactly is love. Do I love this person? Is this person simply someone I'm supposed to care about? And friendship as well. Who are my friends? Are these people my friends because I am merely associated with them? Or are they trying to be more than friends and so on? So Ai has a lot of very complicated things, and I'd say she's probably one of the most complicated characters in WEP, in my opinion. And I think Yonamori's episode just does a really good job of making that clear visually as well, because it was explained a lot in dialogue, I guess, but it wasn't really as easy to understand. And episode 12 came along and I really understood that. So Yonamori, great visual storyteller in summary. In the case of Saito, as we mentioned before, what really stands out is just how eerie this stuff feels. and the characters feel so isolated and lonely, and I couldn't get over it. It still lives in my head to this day. The distance, the lighting, and all these other things really make these characters feel as alone as possible in a world in which it's a world with almost infinite possibilities, but yet they feel like they're the only ones in it, and there's almost no hope, there's no possibility. And that scene with Yambiko and Kodama in the near conclusion of episode 8 of Sunny Boy just really, again, made that clear to me. I also must mention debut animation director as well on episode 3, Nobuhide Kuriya, who is also a really great animator, but this was their debut as an animation director. And that was, I think that's my favorite animation direction in Sunny Boy, and maybe just some of my favorite animation direction in the year straight up. Kuriya has these very sharp, chiseled lines, as we discussed that episode, and it makes the character, it gives a whole new vibe to the characters. They feel even more human than they already do, and the designs in this show already feel very, I'd say, pretty realist in some respects. And so by giving Iguchi's designs this extra flair, I think was just really interesting, and an approach which I'm definitely not going to forget, and I'm going to remember Kuriya moving forward, because hopefully they do some more AD stuff in the future. As I said before, if you do like Gets in the Mecha, I would recommend checking those respective episodes out for a bit of a deeper insight into my thoughts on these directors. So that is the Sunny Boy episode 8 episode. I did one on I did multiple episodes on Wonder Egg Priority. I think it was episode 99, in which I covered Yonamori's episode, or at least some of the parts within it. And yeah, so check those out if you are interested. Now we have a creative in which I have mentioned a few times, but I haven't really done a focused "this is what I like about this creator's work" section. So that is Fugi Yamashiro, who did storyboard and episode direction for Heike Monogatari episode 10. Heike was a really unpredictable anime for many reasons, and I don't mean that narrative wise because obviously there's a novel. So if you read the original tale of the Heike, you would know what happened, but it's more in terms of production, in the sense that this anime was unprecedented, at least for I'd say the quote-unquote average person like me that didn't know anything about Nakayama's status in the industry. And the fact that she was directing an anime at Science Saru, or the fact that she was even directing just an anime outside of Kyoto Animation, makes it such a massive deal. And that meant that we would probably have a completely unique team to come alongside it, or at least the combination of staff, again, is something we've never seen. We haven't seen Takashi Kojima designs meet Naoki Yamada. We've seen like Horiguchi's designs work with Naoki Yamada, but we haven't seen Kojima, for example, and all these other creators. There are too many combinations to mention. Where I think Yamashiro shines is just how they're so keen on blending shots together. Like, I think a lot of the previous episodes in the show are very focused on cuts. And as we said for Yonamori, and in this case, it's Yamada in this show, and I'd say some of the other stuff as well, like Yukimura, it's very much about binaries. And in the case of Yamada, cutting to the far left and right in the frame, of course, makes that really interesting contrast between the different people in the court and so on. And Yamashiro is kind of disrupts that. He goes for an approach of making things a cohesive thing and connecting things together, things that could be cut, he decides to turn into a longer sequence. And I really like that approach, because that taps into another crucial part of the anime, which is about life in general is special on the basis that we are all connected by that same thing, which is the fact that we're all eventually going to die one day. That sort of cinematography that Yamashiro introduces really gets us thinking about that, I think, or it made me think about that quite a bit at some points. Moving on swiftly, let's talk about Mars Red, a show that absolutely I think it's more so everyone actively forgot about Mars Red consciously. We all consciously forgot about Mars Red because it was a bit shaky, I'm not going to lie. But episode one is magnificent. And that is one storyboarded by Ikuo Yamakata and is directed by Kohei Hatano. As you said, I'm a bit mixed on Mars Red. I think it has some really good ideas. Sometimes it can execute, but a lot of the time it's not able to. And I mean that both visually and narrative-wise as well. But overall, I'd say there are some things that I still really liked about that show that I'm not going to forget just because I didn't like the show as a complete whole. However, episode one, I just have to say, is the show realizing that ambition that it kind of sets out both in its narrative and also just overall. This is one of my favorite episodes of anime from this year, and unfortunately it's a very slept on choice. I don't think it's one that many people had, also because I don't think too many people watched Mars Red. It's not a heike as in like no one watched it. I say that sarcastically and quite facetiously, but it's still something that you're not going to hear about very much, if not at all, in the coming years, I don't think. This is a show entirely shot in 21:9. And as you know, as the aspect ratio connoisseur for anime, that really excites me. Shooting in 21:9 can be really great, and you can get some really great shots out of it. You can elevate a show entirely, or just elevate a movie or whatever just by changing that aspect ratio, depending on how it's used. As always, it's a tool more than it is a thing that makes it inherently better. It does this really weird thing to my brain. It sort of like scratches an itch in my brain that I find really satisfying. And episode one is all of that. Yamakata and Hatano really take advantage of the center of the frame. Like, we have these shots where one of the characters who's a vampire is walking, and her feet, her bare feet are just on the ground, and she's just right in the center. And the fact that the feet are almost equally spread apart as well creates an extra sense of symmetry within an already symmetrical frame. This is something I kind of expected for an episode which had Hatano on board, who's also series director for the show, I should specify. And because they also valued this quite a lot on a show called Surutama, for those who know that, directed by Kenji Nakamura, who also worked on Mononoke. The lighting in this show sometimes, not even just exclusively in this episode, is just so incredible. And I feel like the overall goal of this show, I feel like it was trying to be pretty cinematic. It wasn't able to completely achieve it, but this episode does. Like, there's another scene in which one of the main characters walks into the cinema and he opens the door, and it's not a fully lit cinema, and the light just very softly glows through the door, and the rest of the cinema is dark, and I don't know how to explain this any better. It uses all these silhouettes really nicely. It's, again, all very wide and cinematic. It's taking advantage of the fact that it's shooting wide to capture these really great sceneries and really bring character to the world. Again, it wasn't really able to follow up and make this world feel really great in the long run, but I appreciate the effort on the part of Hatano and also Yamakata on this first episode, in the sense that they were able to make what really felt almost like a short film that made me really comfortable in this world, or at least, I don't know about comfortable, because, you know, I was breathing for air because it was so great. But it's just a really strong effort, even if they weren't able to follow it through. I'm still happy with Mars Red, even though I'm mixed on the show, but I'm happy with Mars Red because I think it's a good effort on the part of Kohei Hatano as someone who's still relatively new to directing full series. And so I look forward to see what Yamakata and Hatano can do in the future, because I think, again, both of those two are incredibly talented and have a lot to offer for anime in general. I hate to be the guy that edits himself in the middle of the show to correct or clarify something that they're about to say person, but here I am. So just a brief intermission for the podcast. I just wanted to kind of clarify something, or at least precursor something, before going into the link click section. One thing that I do want to clarify is that when I say Li Haoling, You should probably take that with a bit of a grain of salt when it comes to me talking about him as a director, because after doing a bit more research, or at least some more interpretation of the credits, what I've kind of come to conclude is that Howling serves more as an overarching director more than anything, which is of course not a bad thing, but that of course puts into question as to what is his influence on the aesthetic of the show. Obviously, with a lack of resources, this is a bit difficult to tell, and even with resources, this is a difficult thing to tell for certain shows, and unfortunately, Link Click is one of those. So when I am talking about Lee Howling, of course, just take that with a bit of a grain of salt, and understand that I'm also just talking about the team in general, which is also really great. Anyway, that's all I wanted to add. Back to the show. Let's talk about Donghua, and talk about a pretty popular Donghua recently. One of the more popular Donghua in recent times, or at least I'd say probably the most popular this year, and maybe I'm exaggerating, but that is Link Click. I've watched quite a few of Howling's shows, and I'm pretty aware of them. So maybe I am cheating, but I'd say that this is the first time that I genuinely paid attention to the direction in a Howling show. That's not a criticism. A lot of the time I watch Donghua very casually. I didn't really talk about it online. I kind of just watch and enjoy it, and that's the show. I actually was paying attention to how Link Click was directed, and that was something that really excited me because I think Howling and his team are just super talented. This is another show that is shot fully and completely in 21:9. It depends obviously on how it's used. Something like Mars Red Episode 1 is a really great usage of it, and saying Link Click overall is also showcase a really good use of it. But one of my issues with Donghua is sometimes, at least some of the recent Donghua, is that like they'll use 21:9, but it doesn't really work. It feels like it's there for the sake of being there because they think it looks cinematic when it doesn't, and you really have to work with it rather than just use it. And I think a great director is one in which doesn't just use something for the sake of using it, but knows how to wield it to their advantage, if that makes any sense. So much of the visual language of this show has to do with 21:9, or I'll try and make that link in the sense that so much of it has to do with photography and physical film, as in 35mm film, representing all these crystallized memories and so on. And so when we also think of 21:9 and its roots going back to Cinescope as well, that's a very nostalgic aspect ratio, and pictures, of course, having a lot to do with nostalgia. I think 21:9 really serves to talk about that whole thing on crystallized memories, and the fact that this whole show is kind of about altering those crystallized memories, which people have found so dear to them, in order to, I don't know, change their lives or change the trajectory of their lives. And so 21:9 makes us almost more aware of time and the time in which we're in within the show, be it either present or past. It's just time is a construct to be manipulated. And I think 21:9 just kind of makes us aware that we're in the flow of time. We have to think of direction as a problem-solving exercise as much as it is a creative exercise. And it's a lot about overcoming difficulties and making things, it's again connecting the dots, as I mentioned before. And so by being able to solve this issue of how do I shoot this show successfully in 21:9, I think that's a really big success, considering again there are some Donghua which I've seen which, yeah, they do use 21:9, but not very effectively, or in a way in which I think they could, like Link Click. Let's talk about another Donghua now, and that is Da Wang Rao Ming, but not the actual show itself, but the opening for the show, which was directed by Hiromatsu Shu. And I was aware of Shu prior to their work, but I felt a need to share this one regardless because they were really hyping it up on Twitter for quite a while, and it definitely paid off. Like, I wouldn't have probably found this if they weren't talking about it months in advance, or well, not it directly. They were kind of just showing clips of things, and it looked really great. And so again, this is one of those things that I can't really do complete justice to by just talking about it. So you're just going to have to experience this for yourself. Just search it online and check it out, because this is one of the best Donghua openings I think I've ever seen. But to actually talk about it though, I think what makes this opening super attractive is really just the blend of colors and the very, it comes down to something we keep discussing on this podcast for the a millionth time, binaries. I hate to keep saying that word, but binaries, it all comes back to binaries. This case, we have the very traditional gold and white patterns to speak to the more magic stuff in the show, and that those sorts of textures and traditional textures. And then you contrast that with these very overwhelming bursts of color, these explosions of color, and also just like introducing this more chaotic color schemes and imposing them onto the traditional ones. It's kind of like this fight within the actual opening itself. It's like a battle between these two colors, or at least two color schemes, and it works super well. It's very chaotic, but that's exactly why I like it, because it just keeps doing crazy things all the time. And when you watch it for the first time, you don't really expect what's going to come. You see some really great imagery at the beginning, but then you get to like the explosion and you're just completely in awe. Kind of like what we spoke about when it came to the Odd Taxi opening a few weeks ago. Openings can also have a conversation within themselves, and they do this visually. This opening is just doing exactly that, having a cool conversation between tradition and, I don't say anarchy, but chaos and disruption almost. Just to end this part, I do recommend going to the Asakaburo entry, as there are quite a few Chinese animators that I think are really worth taking note of right now, as they're doing great stuff. Let's shift gears a bit for the final time and talk about music videos. And the goal of this section is really just to bring attention to creators that don't necessarily work predominantly in TV anime. Anime especially is much more than TV and films. We have, obviously, there's a whole indie scene. Just search the hashtag indie anime into Twitter, and that's a whole scene in itself. So I just hope that this can bring more attention for those that maybe aren't looking very much at the music video scene, for example. I'm quite conscious of time, so I'm going to talk specifically about one, but I also just want to point you to three others first. The first one is a music video by Eve, directed by Neil. Of course, all this stuff will be in the show notes or the links and all that. And it's quite hard to talk about the visual ideas again without you seeing it, because they're pretty complex. But that's what I find so wild about this. It's the fact that you probably can't pull off such complex visual ideas in TV anime. And that's what I'd say is so beautiful about it. It's this beautiful experience that I simply can't describe, with all these elements of water and hands and so on. And it just shows how far music videos can push anime from a visual point of view. So go check that video out by Neil. Then there's a music video for the artist Bajin Tobita, directed by Asuka Dokai. And I really, really like this one. It has this really cute aesthetic. It's interesting because space is often presented as quite menacing and quite, as, you know, the final frontier and all these very dramatic things. But the take on space in this video is just so relaxed, in the sense that it kind of has this cozy, if I dare say in the most Tumblr way possible, cottage core, I'm gonna hate that forever, vibe to it. And also just really beautiful character designs as well. So that one really made me feel super nice. And it doesn't move so much, but when it does move, it looks beautiful. And also, even when it's not moving, just the individual shots are just so great. Like, it shows that a shot can do so much. So highly recommend that as well. And then finally, we have a video directed by TV Chani for Zootomayo. And this one is, there are a lot of Zootomayo videos, so I think it's easy to miss them sometimes. And I think this was one that most people didn't talk about the direction and so on, but yet I think it's a really great one. And I say that like this was an unpopular video, when last time I checked it had 7 million views on YouTube. So like, Zootomayo is of course an incredibly popular artist anyway, so a lot of people are going to see TV Chinese work. And what I just really loved about this was like the symmetrical compositions in it. And it has this really interesting commentary on sort of connection and love. I guess it's a really nice, quite cute story, you could say, or just a really interesting one that's worth checking out, as is all Zootomaya videos and just a lot of music videos in general. So check out all three of those videos. And now let's go into our larger creator focus, and this is a video directed by Ryoji Yamada and creative director Shu Sasaki called Trepper Nation. Last episode, when we did speak about Ryoji Yamada's work, we spoke about the Odd Taxi opening and how well constructed that was, and essentially the fact that they're having this entire conversation within the opening in terms of morphing and diversity of the city, blah blah blah, Odd Taxi stuff. And this music video is quite similar in quite a few regards. This time we're kind of having a conversation, I'd say, about robotics, kind of, and you could argue even what it means to be human. Maybe I'm overreading into this, but I find this one really interesting because it's very unique. We're essentially having a conversation, or it's like we're being spoken to by a robot girl or an android. I guess we kind of discover that at the end in how she is pointed right at us, looking at, or at least she's looking straight into the camera, and everything's going on around her, but she isn't moving for most of it, or at least you have these very fixed shots, which are in very fixed positions, which talks about, of course, her being robotic and a robot having limited directions. And then you have all these things morphing around her. I guess you can interpret that as nature, but also I kind of think it talks about how, you know, humans are seen as, or humans are seen as free and not restricted in the same way. So I just love the dynamic in this video, and Yamada, and I suppose also Sasaki as well, introduced these such insightful things that really make my brain like turn, even if it is pretty abstract, and even if I am reaching, it's just a really great visual experience that actually makes you conscious of the video itself and not just a visual to the song. There's more there. And I think you could even argue it deepens the song in quite a few ways or levels. So that's where I'm going to end this episode. Thank you for listening, and again, keeping up with my really long turnaround time for these podcasts / videos. Kind of just been going through it, but yeah, we will get through it. Thank you for listening. If you do enjoy this podcast, what can you do is always, you know, like, subscribe on YouTube, all that stuff. And then also on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, reviews do really help the show quite a lot. So link in the description and show notes and whatever. I just want to end this episode now. Thank you for listening, and hopefully I'll see you next time on Guest in the Mecca. The music in this episode goes as follows: Chill, Adventure Time Revise, On the Road Again, and Synthwave by Alex. And all this music is done by Alex McCulloch and is under the public domain.